to MGO HockeyCast 1.5, where we talk about some ties, some wins, some losses, and maybe even Anthony's trip to Vegas? I feel so much more comfortable. We are back in our actual conference room, the Michigan room. We had to record the MGO podcast in the Eastern Michigan room or the Huron room.
Johns Hopkins. Call
it. Maybe the Johns Hopkins room. But this is so much better. We have a whiteboard, so now I know what I'm actually looking at. Anthony and I are on the same page for this. And we just feel a lot more comfortable. And feeling comfortable, I feel like, is something that is a great way to sum up the GLI, because Michigan has done their favorite thing this year, and they tied two more games in the GLI.
But we're not wearing ties.
We are not wearing ties. We would probably get fired for wearing ties. Brian has put a strict no-tie policy on all of us, so if we have to go to a proper function, we just kind of slide it under the rug there.
I didn't get the memo on the tie thing. No,
well,
but I wouldn't wear a tie
anyway. Slack.
Right, but well, I wouldn't wear a tie anyway.
No, I mean, who wants to wear a tie?
I am wearing a New Jersey Devils jersey, though, which is strange.
I feel like you're tipping something that we'll probably get into a little bit later. That anyway, so we want to address the GLI a little bit. How much of it did you see?
Zero. I tried to watch it.
Did you?
Yeah.
What did you do to
well,
try
the,
to watch it?
I think I tried to record it, is what actually happened.
Okay.
Yes, because I was busy both
was
days.
Was it on Fox Sports Detroit?
No.
No. Was it on Fox Sports Plus?
No.
Okay. I'm running out of options here.
I have DirecTV, so
oh.
I naturally went to Fox Sports Detroit, because traditionally that's where it's found.
Yeah.
I did not see it there, and I went to Fox Sports Plus, and then I went to a few other places, and then I tried searching, and DirecTV's search function is pretty bad. So at that point, I was like, well, something must be going on, and then I did figure out it was actually being streamed on Flow TV.
Flow TV. I feel like we tried to purchase this for the Lake State series.
Did we?
Well, no.
You might have.
Because I would have not probably been reimbursed. So
okay.
That was probably the threshold of how far I'm going to go to try to watch some of this stuff. So I think the point that we're making is, once again, something else. Michigan hockey, not on TV. Why not? There's probably a reason. But anyway, apparently we didn't miss much, because Michigan tied twice, not just once. And then I guess they lost the shootout in the first game. I don't know if they lost the shootout in the second game. I don't think it matters. Does it matter? I mean, it's a tie, so.
I mean, the tree fell in the woods and no one was around.
No one was
so
around.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Officially, it's a tie.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of, you know, where we are at with Michigan hockey. At least we were in December. I looked at through the Corsi. Michigan dominated, semi-dominated the game against Tech, in according to Corsi. And against Michigan State, it was pretty straight up. I think it was like 48, 46. But Michigan State's also played Michigan tough and over the last year and a half. But Michigan also was without their two best players for this. And we knew that going in. We talked about it in the last podcast, World Juniors, all that. Norris and Hughes both played, had some highlights, I think. But they missed the GLI, and apparently so did we all. I think that's it. I don't need to say anything else.
No, it's a little bit disappointing. I will say that growing up in Metro Detroit and not having a ton of access to Yost when I was younger, actually none at all, the biggest deal was when Michigan played at Joe Louis Arena.
So, and they would play Michigan teams.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, just whenever. I mean, it would be the GLI. They'd play the annual game against Michigan State, and then they'd play the annual game against Lake State, and then
right.
They'd play the conference tournament. So
sure.
You could get some seasons where they'd play six or seven games at Joe Louis. And it was always a big deal to go down there and watch them. And I think that kind of led to a little bit of the building of the fan base. I mean, certainly that's part of the reason why I became more of a fan
when
I was younger.
And that was in the time when they were getting really good.
Yeah, they were really good. I mean, this was the 90s and the early 2000s. I mean, the epic 2004 conference title game against First State was really great. I mean, they had a really good one against Ohio State in there. They had some great ones in the 90s. But it was just always, I remember for some of the games you'd get general admission, right? You'd go down and get a GA ticket, or sure, you could get them for free from like a Ford dealership or something. But some of those games you'd actually have to buy a seat. And I mean, they would sell out games against Michigan State out there. And even for your birthday when we went,
it was pretty crowded. I don't think I ever bought tickets on the street to a Michigan hockey game before in Detroit.
Yeah, but I mean, it's really devolved since then, which is really unfortunate. I've spoken to people that were there, and it was basically dead.
Yeah.
And I know that part of it is because it was Sunday morning or Sunday early afternoon.
It was literally in the morning. The second game was at they played at 11:30.
On New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Which theoretically shouldn't be that bad because New Year's Eve, like, what are you going to be doing? But, I mean, Sunday afternoon, I had something
going. That was a Monday.
But no, the early one was, the other one was Sunday afternoon at like 2:30 or 4:00.
Oh, yeah, that was also
like that.
The middle of the day.
Yeah, so I guess the times weren't amazing, but at the same time, there's really no interest. And it's really unfortunate because that's not how I grew up, and it feels like it's devolved quite a bit, and I hope they fix it because I think it's the way to build a fan base, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. Well, an extension to different areas in Southeast Michigan.
Right.
I feel like this part of the segment has resulted in a tie. So as soon as that was over, though, they Michigan played kind of a weird one-off game at Notre Dame in Notre Dame's football stadium, which obviously we've heard about, and there's some hype going into it. But it was just kind of a weird environment because did you watch any of the Winter Classic, the Bruins and Blackhawks from a couple days before that?
No, I did not.
I had it on briefly, but it was full, or mostly full.
Right.
That was not the case.
No.
For the Michigan
Notre
Dame
game. The announced crowd was in the low 20,000s, I believe.
Yeah, it was like 23 or something, and they had completely like blocked off certain areas. Also, they had to move the game time because of like
That's
weather conditions.
Kind of common for outdoor games, though, and it was only an hour push back. Like, I don't see that as a big impediment. You
know? Well, but then because the sun came out. That had certain, like, added certain things to the sight lines.
Right.
Which led to potentially one of the goals.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
And and so Michigan scores probably the craziest goal I've ever seen Michigan score. Mm-hmm. Not in a, like, that was amazingly awesome kind of way.
Right.
But in a, I need to get the puck out of my own zone. Mm-hmm. A guy's closing in on me. I'll see if I can dump it on net. Mm-hmm. And it goes in.
Super fluky. Yeah. I think that was a... The first period was really bad for Notre Dame. But yeah, the Ciccone goal was, I mean, it hit all the highlights. It was all over Twitter.
Sure.
I mean, there's not much to say about it. Like, as a goalie, the sight lines are really bad. Once the puck rises to the point where it's above the boards, you can really easily lose it when you're tracking. So whatever the backdrop is, if it's something dark, you will lose the puck as it's coming towards you.
And that's
and over
different.
A long distance, it kind of hovers. And so you can totally lose it. And it's just like losing the baseball in the lights. But people don't think about it like that. And, you know, something weird like that can happen where it just kind of goes in. And you see that sometimes in hockey, like a longer goal that's hovers in the air about chest high. Like, those are hard for goalies to track.
Hmm.
And that's basically what happens.
Like a line drive that's hit right at you.
Yeah. You know, yeah, definitely something like that because it knuckles a little bit or whatever.
Yeah.
But I would compare it to like losing a baseball in the lights.
Okay.
Like what you're looking at is a black thing that if you go above like the white boards and then the backdrop is different, like you can easily like lose that as it rises and then kind of comes back down.
And
so,
Brian was even mentioning, we talked about this in the MGO podcast a little bit ago, and he was mentioning that the wind might even have been a factor because it was a little bit windy.
I don't think so.
No?
I mean, no. I mean, honestly.
Oh, well, okay.
Right?
I was kidding.
Yeah.
Go somewhere. But the point is that could the wind have been a factor in a game like this? Is that possible?
I think for skating more than like puck movement.
Okay.
The ice looked a little bit bad. So I think it was Michigan's second goal. The one where it just kind of chopped over the goalie's shoulder.
That was
Moyle,
the third one.
Right?
That was the third one.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. The second one was actually the nice one.
Second one was really nice
from
Lockwood.
Okay.
Thought.
So the Moyle goal, it looked like it was just really bad ice and he kind of whiffed on it and it just fluttered over the goalie's shoulder.
That's yeah.
Right. So I think that ice conditions can get bad, but wind, when you're skating outdoors, it does have a little bit of an effect. on a speed like standpoint, and that's why they talk about like switching halves in the third period, so everybody has to go against it.
I don't believe they did. They thought
no, because it didn't end up getting bad enough.
Okay.
So if it wasn't bad enough where they'd switch to make it even, it probably wasn't bad enough like on the ice for both teams.
So Brian talked about how he's pretty much over outdoor games, mm-hmm. and the novelty is all but worn off, and right. blah blah blah. And I would tend to agree because mm-hmm. you're playing, especially in like a baseball or a football stadium,
right.
because you're playing in such a bigger stadium than is meant to be, and mm-hmm. so the there's a lot of space
right.
between the surface and you. I mean, is that, or do you feel similarly, or are you still kind of enthused about it? Just because, I mean, you play hockey, you have your whole life, and you currently play in Ann Arbor on different teams. Would you?
As a fan, I don't think it's definitely a novelty, right? And I think what matters is for the experience of people going to the game.
Yeah.
So number one, it's for the players and for the people going to the game. It's a really bad TV event.
Yeah.
Because the camera angles are messed up. It's usually lower. It's a little bit too zoomed out. Like, it's not a good TV event. And the takeaway, and people who went to the Winter Classic, they talk about how great it was to be there.
Okay.
And, you know, when the Winter Classic was in Ann Arbor, it was the same thing. It was really great to be there. But, I mean, it's a bad event for people watching on TV. So I think that I'm not over outdoor games in the sense where is if I was available and could have gone, like I would have really enjoyed it.
Okay.
And if they did another one at the big house, we'd all go.
Yeah.
And we'd all have a good time.
I mean,
right.
What are you going to do? Not go to a Michigan event?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I wouldn't say that I'm over it, but like, I don't expect anything when I watch an outdoor game, right?
Okay.
It's a party, you know? And so taking,
do you expect it to be a little more almost like random, like not like a true hockey game of where you can expect a team of a certain skill level and a team of another skill level mm-hmm. where it might be very jumbled?
I don't think that. I mean, in this case, Michigan benefited from bad sightline, obviously. Yeah,
clearly.
But I don't think generally it is. I do have a problem with them playing big games outdoors. So last year at the World Juniors in Buffalo, they played the game at Bill Stadium,
okay.
USA versus Canada,
oh.
which always matters, right?
Yeah.
And it was too snowy. It was such a bad television game.
Was it a knockout game or was it a prelim game?
It was a prelim game. But
okay.
preliminary games mean a lot in the World Juniors because your seeding really matters.
Sure.
So like every game matters greatly. So that stunk. You know, but for a regular season college hockey game, like, I don't see why not. And when's the last one Michigan played in, like, 3 or 4 years ago? It was the one in Chicago that they sold, that Dave Brandon sold,
right? Yeah, that's
true.
That was, like, I think that was, like, 14 or 15.
People who live in Chicago could go, though.
No one did.
I know people who live in Chicago that did. But
okay,
they're not going to put 70,000 people in a stadium unless it's in Ann Arbor or East Lansing.
That's probably true.
Right? Like, that's the only time they'll ever do it.
Yeah.
But for the other ones, if it's an interesting thing, like it's an event for the people who are there, fine. I think what hasn't been tried, and I don't know if it ever will, but a smaller stadium with no roof.
So like an MLS stadium type, so to speak.
Yes. I think that would be much, well, soccer fields are huge, so that would be kind of a problem. But if there's ever a way.
Oh, you mean like a smaller.
Yes.
Like
right.
An actual, field size.
If you took the rink, if you took the roof off an outdoor arena or an indoor arena, like the Little Caesars Arena, for example.
Okay.
I think that would be the sweet spot. But I mean, what's the odds of that ever happening?
And what's the point of just taking a roof off something?
I mean, maybe one day they'll build a retractable roof.
I guess for that. Sometimes we'll play a basketball game. Oh, it's going to rain. We got to shut the roof.
Or an aircraft carrier.
also.
I disagree. Like I said, to go back to the original question, I disagree because it's for the fans who go. And if you don't want to go, then fine. But I know a lot of people that drove down there and really enjoyed it.
In theory, like 23,000 people is mm-hmm. still a lot of people for hockey.
It is. It is. And it was. And I'm sure they had fun.
And it was warm enough.
Right.
You're not sitting around in like 3 degrees.
I mean, the Red Wings and Maple Leafs game at Big House was a snowstorm. And it was awesome. Like, it was one of my favorite hockey experiences.
Wasn't that super cold?
It was really, really cold and really, really snowy. And
yeah.
we had a blast.
All right.
So it's there for the fans.
Yeah.
It's a fan. In a sport that is really not fan friendly. It's actually anti-fan, in my opinion, in a lot of ways, and I'm sorry, but it's the truth.
I mean,
we just tried to watch the GLI, and it's not on television, and the national tournament is single elimination. It's very anti-fan. To do something that is explicitly for the fans and the players,
it's probably
a good idea.
Yeah.
So.
No, that makes a lot of sense. The rest of the game was kind of there. You mentioned the Moyle goal. Mm-hmm. We briefly talked about Lockwood goal. I think that's a little significant because Lockwood has played well, I think, since then.
Yes.
He scored a couple of goals later, which we can get into. But mm-hmm. He was had some goals in the early part of the season, but he's a guy that, you know, with their talent level, that they're going to be counted on. Yeah. And he took that puck, broke it out, passed mm-hmm. the red line, in, deked the defender, and put a shot on net, and mm-hmm. beat arguably one of the better goalies in college hockey.
Yeah, I think that goalie was rattled a little bit from
sure.
there.
So, and they so talked the timing was right? Yeah.
The timing was right. He was slow coming off his post. Like, he was just not there. I think he had a really, really bad first period. And that's to be expected after letting a goal like that can really rattle you. But, I mean, Lockwood took advantage of that. Mm-hmm. And that was the difference in the game, obviously.
Yeah.
So, I mean, good on Michigan for doing that. They played really well in the second and third period, just overall. I mean, it was a good game for them. And that's what they needed. They have to get that. Does that count as a road win in pairwise?
I mean, you would think so.
Not
right?
a neutral site?
I mean, it was at.
Yeah, I guess. Notre Dame. So, I mean, they need those road wins.
Yeah.
Especially against a top 10 team. So that was very important.
And it also kind of showed, and we'll get into this a little bit more later when we talk about Ohio State, but it also kind of showed how Michigan, for as much talent as they don't have mm-hmm. or star power to that extent, they're not that far behind the top end teams in this conference. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of like an eye opener a little bit, because we saw Michigan play kind of poorly against Michigan State and against right. Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And those are teams that have been more towards the bottom the last year or so.
Right.
And now they go to Notre Dame, not only win a game, but play well.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't play poorly. I guess it's not as much playing well as like they didn't play poorly, because that's kind of what's come back to haunt them in a lot of these games this year, is they just have flashes of playing poorly, and they did not in that game.
I think what we're seeing is there's parity in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Big Ten is a subset of college hockey.
Okay.
There's not really a lot of parity in college hockey in some ways. So the Big Ten is basically drawing the same level of talent for all their teams, give or take a little bit,
mm-hmm.
as of right now. It might not have been true 20 years ago, or it might not have been true 15 years ago, but if you look at the last, basically this decade, the talent level is pretty much on the same level, give or take, you know, one team being up or down every given mm-hmm. year, mm-hmm. Michigan State being particularly bad, Wisconsin going through a couple bad years. But what we're seeing also is the coaching is, if you look at all seven coaches, they're all very, very good coaches. And so that, I think, draws it all even closer together. And then your differentiators are what? Your goalies and maybe your superstars.
Yeah.
So that is where the separation is going to happen. And I think that's where the separation has happened with Notre Dame and Ohio State. Well,
the last year, I mean, remember Romeo and Morris were just like, Michigan couldn't beat them to save their lives.
Right. And, I mean, Morris just had a bad game. They had a goalie meltdown.
Right.
You know, so, but, you know, typically that's what those teams are. I think last year Ohio State was a little bit better than they are this year.
I think so, too.
But overall, I mean, that's where you're seeing the separation. We are very happy with Mel and the way he's done the system and what they are able to get out of this level of talent. But the other coaches in the Big Ten are also very good. So Michigan isn't going into a game with a big coaching advantage. And that's not to, you know, that's not to say a bad thing about Mel. It's to say a good thing about the conference. And that's what we wanted, because 5 years ago we were complaining about how much of a joke this conference was.
Yeah.
So we got what we wanted.
Yep.
And it was at Michigan's expense a little bit. But we got what we wanted. That's what we're asking for.
And I think that's what you want for the sport. And now it's up to Michigan to recruit a little bit better and develop a little bit better. And I think they can. We're still, and this is kind of stepping on a little bit from the next segment. But so last thing, uniforms. We talked to Brian a little bit. I thought they looked a little bit like stormtroopers.
I thought they ruled.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Would you want Michigan to do that? How often?
Wear the all whites?
Yeah.
I think it could be a thing. Definitely.
Like, you mean like football wore the all whites as a thing, or like it could be in the rotation?
So it's an alternate. Like, you know, at a big game at home, they bring out the Mays goalies. The Mays jerseys.
The whites could be a big deal.
Yeah.
So like
the white pants, and maybe even mix it in with, see how they look with the Mays or the blue. I'm sure they've tried it, but I think the white pants are a good thing. I think I didn't really like the horizontal stripes on the Mays jerseys, but like the white pants and the white gloves are a thing. I mean, it's kind of an underutilized thing in the sport. White gloves have been around a lot longer than notable teams have been using them.
Okay.
Vegas made them a lot more, I would say, accepted last year, right? It's more of a thing, like that's their road gloves are white. And I don't see why Michigan couldn't do that. I think it's pretty cool.
If Michigan, theoretically, if they get a little bit hot and host a first-round Big Ten series, and maybe they win game one, game two, they just come out in all whites and don't say anything.
Cool.
That would be all right. I could be on board with that.
Right. don't do it all the time, but do it once or twice a year.
Yeah.
You know, your Thanksgiving weekend, something like that. You know,
yeah.
Like those kind
yeah.
of things.
All right. That sounds good. Well, that's the first half of the plethora of games that we have to discuss. So let's take a little break now, and we'll come back and get to one unfortunate game and another uplifting series.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Back, folks, here on the Michigan In- oh, sorry, I've been listening to way too much Sam Webb lately, and but anyway, we
like
are
Sam.
Back. Yeah, no, Sam's a great guy. So now we're going to talk about the last few games, which were a bit more of a roller coaster ride, I would say, than the previous ones, which were all kind of just going along. Very visual podcast. I just did a hand motion.
I'm trying to equate that to a ride.
To a ride?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that was more of a plane lifting off. I think we're in the weeds. We should get back on the course. So the first game up is the wonderful enjoyment of a Tuesday night experience at Yost against the number, at the time, 52-ranked team in the country, Merrimack in Michigan, and Merrimack ended up winning 4-2, unfortunately. You didn't see much of this game?
I did not see it at all. I was traveling for work.
Oh, yeah. Weren't you in Vegas?
I was in Las Vegas.
Didn't you go to a Knights game?
I was at the Golden Knights game when that happened. Can we talk about the Golden Knights game instead? If you are a hockey fan.
Are you hijacking this?
We didn't plan on this, but maybe. If you are a hockey fan, you owe it to yourself to go to see the Las Vegas Golden Knights game. It is amazing. So what they did is they built this arena behind the New York Hotel and Casino. I had stayed at New York many times for work. And they've basically turned this into, as you're walking from the strip to the arena, you're walking this path of like Golden Knights-ness. And
this.
So you walk by a bunch of bars and restaurants that they've kind of made into like, you're walking to the arena, have a drink. And since it's Vegas, you can just have a drink and keep walking and, you know, gamble. And all the dealers are wearing Golden Knights jerseys. And the pathway between what used to be the Monte Carlo and now is the Park MGM is just this beautiful like outdoor bar and path to the arena. And you get to the arena and it's kind of walking up to Wembley. When as you get off the train, you walk this long path to get to Wembley in London.
Another place you've
amazing.
Been here.
Yeah, it's amazing. But inside the arena, you walk in and the drum line is running around like playing. It's like a college football game.
So they have their band walk in.
Their band is in there walking around during warm-ups or whatever. I was in there about an hour before. Inside the arena, everyone is in their seats. Almost every single person is wearing Golden Knights merchandise. Everyone is smiling. Nobody is from Vegas because no one grows up in Vegas. So you talk to people as like, oh, I was from St. Louis and now I really love this team. Or I was from Colorado and now this is my favorite team and the Avalanche are my second favorite team. And it is nothing but like 2.5 hours of everyone having a great time. Now, it helps that the team is good. I think they're like third best in the league right now.
Slightly spoiled the last
right.
year and
a
half.
They played a bad team. They played the Rangers. But it was a top five hockey experience for me. It was honestly, and I've been to a lot of hockey games, and I've been to a lot of really great events, and I've been very fortunate.
Who is the MC?
Brian Luttrell from the Backstreet Boys. I tweeted this. Yes, I kid you not. Now, I was able to get my wife to agree to go to a game, and she goes to a lot of hockey with me, so it's not like a big deal.
And she plays hockey, right?
She does.
So?
But I was able to convince her we need to go to a Golden Knights game.
Okay.
Because Brian Luttrell is the MC, and that was her favorite Backstreet Boy. And it was fantastic.
Who is your favorite Backstreet Boy?
Lance Bass. Wait, was that NSYNC? I don't even know. It doesn't matter. I mean, they're all great.
Whichever one was in 98 Degrees.
It's like you can't. I don't have kids, but you can never choose your favorite child. Right? Like,
well,
I can't choose my favorite Backstreet
in
Boy.
In theory.
So no, if you are a Michigan fan or a hockey fan, go. Well, Michigan fan because Pacioretty and Merrill play. But go to a Golden Knights game. It was fantastic. It's phenomenal. You can get decent seats off of StubHub, and you will have a great time. They do a phenomenal job. The ushers are happy to help people. Everyone is – the ushers come out into the concourse when there's 2 minutes left in the with the Zamboni, you know, the between periods.
Sure.
And they corral people back into their seats. It is so great. Everyone's so happy. I couldn't say enough. Now, that brought me to thinking, like, the Frozen Four should have already been scheduled there. Right? Like, why aren't they doing this? Yeah. The World Juniors should have already been scheduled there. Because Canadians go there for, you know, any excuse to go to Vegas, Canadians are going to go.
Right.
It's phenomenal.
Okay.
I could not say enough good things. Now, if you're a Red Wings fan, the Red Wings play there the Saturday night of March Madness this year. Oh. The first weekend of March Madness. So you will probably see me there.
Are there Wings fans left?
I mean.
Or did Ken Holland sell them all?
It sucks. All right, so can we give... I'm sorry to hijack this. It's probably a good thing we talked about it, but go. If you're a hockey fan, go.
So we were talking about a roller coaster ride, and this is a high, and now we're going to talk about the Merrimack loss, which is kind of going right.
I guess it is a good segue
track.
Because while I am there tweeting or texting you,
yes.
talking about how amazing it is,
yes.
you are at this Merrimack game.
On Tuesday night.
Oh my gosh.
Without Josh Norris, Quinn Hughes also did not play. And through two periods, the shots were 22-22.
Yeah, so I'm having the time of my life, and the text coming through to me, I could feel your anguish on the screen. And I felt bad, but I was in line for a beer, so I only felt not so bad.
I wanted to Skype you and just be like, can I just watch what you're watching, please?
It was incredible. There was a great fight. Like, you don't even see good fights in hockey anymore. People were losing their minds, man. I'm so sorry you had to watch that game.
So Michigan basically plays not even a 50-50, but also kind of a 50-50 game with Merrimack, and they kind of dominate portions of the game, but give up just two of the worst goals. Like, this is just very Michigan hockey, where they play all right defense, control the puck, get some shots in the offensive end, and then something happens, and somehow somebody gets the puck at their own blue line, and for whatever reason... Or I guess it was at the Michigan blue line. And for whatever reason, Michigan's defensemen were kind of like on the boards or away from the center of the ice. And the guy comes screaming down the middle. You can see Blankenberg and Sacconi, the top pair, try to close the gap. They can't. The guy gets a shot off and scores. And that's not too dissimilar from another one of their goals. Their third was a Well, the result was. Their other goal was a power play goal where the puck is trapped along the boards and it squirts out to a guy who's standing alone in the slot. And
that's happened a few times this year, I feel.
Well, so you can picture it.
Yeah.
And another goal is given up, and I just was like, well, that's... I mean, what's Starhawk's man going to do with that?
I didn't really need to picture it because I can see your face right
yeah.
now, so that's all I really
also,
need to see.
This is as visual of a podcast as we've had, I think.
Yes.
So, anyway, so with those two goals, you're just like, they're playing not a great game, but an acceptable game without their top players against a team that they should theoretically roll over and just give up the two worst pick sixes, essentially. And with the way that they score goals, you know, you're fighting the rest of the third period just to stay in it. They get one back, and then they get another one back, and it's 3-2, and they're kind of pounding at the end and kind of dominating the game, and I think that kind of jacked up the Corsi in their favor. But, like...
Score effect.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and, you know, they couldn't tie the game. And that's been sort of the position that Michigan's put themselves in enough times this year where they have to get a goal, and so because they can't create a really good shot or from a high-danger area because there's not a ton of skill and guys can't lose a defender, you just take a lot of shots and you hope for tip-ins, you hope for rebounds, you hope for redirects, you hope for screenings, all those things. But you're basically leaving it up to chance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did, and they didn't get a bounce. And when that's the case, I mean, what do you do? Well,
that's how it goes.
That's the game that they have to play. And so,
but can I play devil's advocate?
You can always play devil's advocate.
Do they have to play that game against a team who's largely recruiting from like tier two junior leagues and has next to nobody that even this version of Michigan's team would want?
Well, they played them 50-50 for the first two periods.
Yeah, it seems like you were saying before the game it was maybe a trap game.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of, but maybe not. I mean, I remember their leading scorer coming into the game had, I think he had something like 5 goals and 9 assists in 21 games. Hmm. And that would probably be 4th or 5th on Michigan's scoring list.
Hmm.
And he's a defenseman.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're not playing without your... I'm sorry, you are playing without your top two players.
Right.
And it's a Tuesday game, and you just came off a big win. It kind of says trap game. But also, like, they weren't overwhelmed. They just made two really dumb mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
should they be, though?
Huh?
Should they be at this point?
Dumb mistakes?
Making those against a team like that?
I don't think those are mistakes you generally make very often ever.
Yeah.
But especially for a team that wants to say they have a good defense and are well coached. But, you know, maybe those are aberrations and all that. So it's unfortunate, but we should move on to something slightly more better, because now we're in this valley and we have to go back up to the top here, which is what happened on Friday. Cause so after this game, you're thinking, oh, good, now we get to go to Ohio State, who's number six in the country, arguably the best team in the Big Ten, leading in points, and nobody scores goals on either of these goalies because now they have a second goalie who's a sophomore, Tommy Napier, I think is his name, whose save percentage is like 9.5 or something. Like, where are people finding these guys?
Mm-hmm.
And they end up winning the game. And they, I think they had better Corsi numbers and had opportunities. Now, you mentioned you thought that Ohio State might be a little bit down from what they were last year, and Michigan took advantage of a couple of those opportunities. But they still, I think, drove the net, and they controlled play.
Yeah, definitely. I thought Michigan played extremely well. I think Ohio State looked a little bit flat, to be honest.
Okay.
And I think Michigan, you know, deserved the win. Like, it wasn't a fluke.
No.
You know, Ohio State was without Gustav.
Oh, Westland.
Yeah. So, and I think he's playing on their top line.
Michigan also didn't have Norris
right.
in that
game
either.
Yeah, yeah. So Norris being out, winning on the road against a really good team, a top 10 team without Norris is very impressive. And the way they did it, I thought was, you know, pretty impressive. They got the job done. And Levine only had 23 shots. I don't think he really had to work for a ton of them. I mean, they kept the puck in front of him. I don't think he had to make any huge saves. It was a pretty clean night from their team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, their defense on Friday played, I thought, really well. And honestly, Saturday was mostly fine, too, with an error or so. But they played kind of like what we talked about. I feel like I tweeted this after the game, but they played how they needed to play all year and what was going to put them in the best position to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
Playing airtight defense, getting above average goaltending, and then taking advantage of opportunities in the offensive end when they were there. Or on the power play. They didn't in this game. They did it on Saturday. But that's kind of what this team needs to be. And they kind of did it throughout the weekend. They ended up losing Saturday, but it was a very similar game. All our games seem to be similar. But it was
That's by design.
Well, they played well. They took the puck to Napier, I thought, in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Had a lead after 50 minutes. So yes. They're in it. So they're 10 minutes away from sweeping a top six team in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Getting right back on the bubble, and then have a couple defensive breakdowns, and Levine gets beat on a shot that goes above his shoulder. I thought Levine played pretty well all weekend.
I would agree. Yeah.
Backing up his Notre Dame performance. Nothing that stood out. None of the goals were like, this was a terrible goal. He wasn't leaving rebounds everywhere. He seemed to be in good position. I think he even stopped multiple breakaways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they get that kind of goaltending, they're going to be in a lot of games in the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think I think he's been solid for them. I don't think he's let any howlers in. I don't think he's really struggling. Like, there's games even last year when they were playing well and they were winning, and he wasn't really tracking the puck that well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he'd cuff a shot from the point or something like that, not catch it clean, not save it clean, not control the rebound. But he's doing that a little bit better.
Okay.
I mean, save percentage is still under 900.
Yeah. He might have been starting from
right. It's odd because it doesn't look like a 900 goalie.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's kind of a product of Michigan's tendency to give up a lot of bad chances.
Right. And so then you might, because his save, he made, I think, 18 saves, or three, gave up three goals and 18 shots on Saturday.
Yeah.
Which sounds awful.
Right.
But, like, he also made a number of fantastic saves in there. So when you're looking at it, you're like, okay, these are bad numbers, but look at what the chances.
The Ohio State's third period was two goals on three shots on him.
Yeah.
So Michigan was doing what they were trying to do, but the shots that we're getting through were pretty good chances. I mean, they were...
Yeah, I mean, the game tire was bar down, I believe.
Yeah, and you can't ask a goalie to stand around for 20 minutes and then make a
safe.
No, and
I mean, we talked about how Randall kind of chased the guy, and Warren didn't really come off his man when he was standing in space and allowed the guy to walk into the slot, and he took a good shot.
If you
harass him, he probably doesn't take a shot, kind of like how when you pressure a quarterback... Right. He can't hit an open receiver.
You can't chase a guy like that around the zone without help.
Right.
So Randall pretty much did his job, and Warren got kind of caught in no man's land, handing a guy off or whatever. And I mean, he got enough of a window to take a shot, and it was a quality scoring chance.
Yeah.
But Ohio State kind of created that out of nothing. It's just basically zone play, but you know, it's just kind of how it's going to go, especially against a good team. Ohio State's going to win some of those games. You're basically trying to play a 50-50 game with everybody.
Yeah.
And you're going to lose half of those games.
You are.
The definition of 50-50.
And honestly, like, getting a split at Ohio State is, right. like, that's something they haven't done in a little while. So, mm-hmm. it's ended up being okay. They're just in a position now where they're going to have to win these games.
Right.
You can't tie and lose them the way that they have, and their backs are kind of against the wall if they're mm-hmm. going to want to break into the tournament. You are referenced your New Jersey Devils jersey. Is it a Scott Stevens jersey, or is it like a John McClain jersey?
John Madden play for them?
John Madden also played for them.
Yeah, that's who.
A John Madden jersey.
Rep, yeah.
Okay. Why are you wearing a John Madden New Jersey Devils jersey, Anthony?
Well, so I think that one of the observations I made, and I hate to admit this. All right. So during the Notre Dame outdoor game.
Yeah.
It was kind of tough to follow. I think part of the reason because the TV product of an outdoor game, as we talked about, is bad.
Yeah.
But also the game kind of slowed to a screeching halt.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a lot of mucking it up.
Not a lot of scoring chances.
And our Pierre McGuire, God help me for referencing him on a podcast or at all, kept hammering on the point about Michigan's neutral zone play being very, very well. Which was a very polite way for him to say they are trapping the neutral zone. Because no one wants to say that, but that's effectively what they did. And as I kind of leapt forward out of my seat because he kept talking about it and I wanted to say, what is this guy talking about? And he's like, oh yeah, they're right. And I started paying attention. That's exactly what they were doing. I thought it was really smart and very effective. It's how they beat Notre Dame. I mm-hmm. mean, Notre Dame almost came back. I think they had the post with less than a minute left.
Oh, and it was, yeah, because it was they pulled a goalie, right?
Right. So Michigan basically hung on for dear life for mm-hmm. 45 minutes of that game. And it worked, right? They won. Now the Ohio State game, they got up by one and basically went to a trap. And it worked, and they won.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to be a little bit of a sea change from earlier in the season when they were up on Notre Dame at home and they took the play to them in the offensive zone.
Right.
And were very effective with that. And it was actually pretty exciting and
they
nice.
Could have won that 4-1 maybe. They had chances.
Right. But I think that maybe without Norris and without the effectiveness of a first line, you can't get those rushes.
Or Hughes breaking the puck out, zone yeah. entries, that type of thing.
Right. But I think that overall it was smart to kind of drop the trapping into the neutral zone and keep the pressure in the neutral zone rather than the offensive zone. But I think that might be where they're going for the rest of the season, depending on who they're playing and, you know, home or away or whatever with the matchups. But it was, they basically won those two games by trapping, you know,
and that's
once they got up.
Effective, but not interesting.
No, I fell asleep during the Notre Dame game.
You didn't have to say that. Maybe you well, did
I mean,
have to say
the
that.
Entire sport fell asleep in the 90s. Brian wrote a brilliant thing when Red retired about how Michigan hockey was like the exact opposite and exactly what the sport needed as the Devils were choking it to death.
Was the breath of fresh air of
exactly.
just end-to-end.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite pieces by Brian.
Okay.
But it was, I wouldn't say they've become that, and I'm not going to say they've become that because that's not what it is. But it's also a little bit, it's interesting to see that they are doing this to be effective at this part.
And it's kind of, unfortunately, it's, well, let me say, it's probably,
smart.
It's a good thing to have in their back pocket to mm-hmm. be able to do that in those games.
Right.
Obviously, they didn't go into the Notre Dame game thinking, we're going to get up 2-3 and then we're going to do this.
Right.
But once you get into that spot and you, I mean, you have to know that you struggle to score even strength goals.
Right.
And they scored a goal on the power play on Saturday, but they hadn't scored in multiple games mm-hmm. before that. So you're not creating a lot of goals. So if you get the lead, like if the other team ties it, the odds of you just going and creating a goal and winning the game have not been high. Hence all of the ties.
Right.
So you got to keep it.
So where do you want to take the play if you're Michigan? Think about it. They're playing dominant in the offensive zone for a lot of the first half of the season, but mm-hmm. not generating any scoring chances because mm-hmm. they really can't.
So it's just
so now you're just you're getting stretched out on the counterattack.
Right.
And if a defenseman pinches or makes a bad pass, if Quinn Hughes, you know, lays one off on the blue line and someone jumps it, then you've got a two-zone breakaway
yeah.
or like a two-zone transition attempt, which is very – those are the hardest shots to stop in hockey for a goalie other than stuff coming from behind the net. So you're putting the team in a position where they're going to get scored on more often than not.
Yeah.
And so if you're dominating possession in the other team's zone and you're giving up those chances, are you really playing dominant hockey? So that's why I don't really like the Corsi argument with this Michigan team.
Okay.
Because, well, they out Corsi'd them. Well, okay. Well, what are the scoring chances?
Yeah.
Right?
What are the expected
goals?
Yeah.
Because expected goals, even though Michigan's, 55-60% Corsi team in most of these games?
Yeah, and they're, I think, top five nationally.
Do you think they're a 55% or 60% expected goals team?
I do not.
I would think they're probably not, right? Especially at even strength.
Worry that they might be at the bottom end.
They're probably 40-45% expected goals in some games, at even strength, at least. So taking the play from the offensive zone to the neutral zone is really smart because now you're not getting stretched out on the counterattack. So if you muck it up and you're trapping at the red line or coming out of the defensive zone, you still have a forward available for a back check on a broken play. Like, everything just makes more sense. And so what they did to Notre Dame in that outdoor game and what they did to Ohio State, and it seems like maybe they worked on it over Christmas. Like, I have no info on that. Like, I have no idea, but like, it was pretty effective. And although, like, it sucks the life out of games. So that Notre Dame game, the last two periods, there were 8 scoring chances combined between the two teams.
Yeah, I remember you saying that.
Yeah, not 8 scoring chances for any one team, just for both teams.
When you want to look at it from a Michigan perspective, when you have a 3-1 lead and you're going to limit scoring chances for everyone and you're on the road at a top 10 team.
What does our friend Herm Edwards say?
You play to win the game. He also says, leave it all on the grass.
Well, they could have at Notre Dame Stadium.
That's true.
Right. But
leave it on
turf. I think it's effective. It's not pretty, but I would much rather Michigan win ugly than.
People complain about it and stuff, and it makes sense. It's just that when you look at it from a Michigan hockey, from the 18-19 season mm-hmm. in perspective,
right.
That's what you have to do. And maybe next year they don't. Maybe in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, they don't have to. But for right now, for the games that are looking at the schedule in front mm-hmm. of me right here, a lot of those are going to require that, especially if you get up. Now, if you're chasing, you got to go get goals.
Right.
But if you have a chance to steal a win, especially on the road when they got to go to Minnesota, they got to play a game in New York City, they got to go back to Notre Dame and to Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And if you get gifted goals or you can create something early, it's just got to be what's got to happen.
Oh, yeah. I have no problem with it. I think it's really smart. I think a few times this season we've seen really smart things out of Mel. I think consistently we're seeing really smart things out of the coaching staff off and on the ice.
And that's really good.
I mean, that's what you expect.
And that's what you hope for. And that's, you know, we didn't see that towards the end of the Red Era. And now we're seeing it with Mel. And it's reinforcing the hire. And is, you know, he the best coach in the Big Ten? I don't know. Maybe not. But he's not clearly out of it. He's in that conversation, and you're seeing it produce because he's getting results from teams that maybe don't have the most talent on the ice.
Yeah, and I think that this team is even in the tournament conversation is a miracle.
Yeah.
Because when you watch them game in, game out.
It's been, well, right. I saw the Merrimack game.
We've seen enough of the team this season to think, like, how is this a possible 75th percentile team in a sport?
And if you get some puck luck or you get hot and LaVine just has a shutdown few series, I mean, they're right back in it. And that's, you know, is that likely? Maybe not.
Right.
But they have a chance. They still have a chance.
The fact that you're even having this conversation, like before we started the podcast, Dave, to the listeners out there, Dave is saying, well, they're so close, a bounce here or there, and, you know, they could be much better than they are.
Right.
And even put themselves in that position is really impressive.
It's a tribute definitely to the coaching staff.
Right. Because if they played fast and looser, they had a lesser coaching staff, this team would probably be like Wisconsin from a few years ago.
And we want to see that. That's the hockey we want to see. But you don't want to see it when when you lose track meets. Losing track meets is never fun.
Teams with no talent that try to open it up aren't fun to watch either.
No.
I can promise you.
Yeah.
So
we are about halfway through our 10 podcast series. We will try to get to another one in a week or two, and we'll have a few more going forward, hopefully with some positive results. Mm-hmm. Michigan's off this upcoming weekend, mm-hmm. and then they return to the ice in a home and garden series mm-hmm. against Penn State, I believe,
yes.
with an Indiana basketball game on that Friday. So it should be a fun weekend. You'll have Michigan at Yost on Thursday.
Yep.
At Bloomington for basketball on Friday, and then Michigan at the Garden in hockey on Saturday. And probably either after that series or after the following series against Minnesota, we'll be back. But that should give you a big wrap-up for for the last two or three weeks and six games that Michigan hockey's kind of had an avalanche here.
Right. So, yeah, Super Bowl weekend's Minnesota series, and we'll be back right after that to talk about it.
Sounds good.
What do they have, 10 games left or 11? Do we count?
I think we said 11.
What do you think they need to do to make the tournament?
To be safe? Well, I mean, they'll have that. If they can win their first playoff series, it probably helps in the Big Ten. But going into it, I would feel probably the most comfortable somewhere around 8-3.
Right now, what are they, fourth or fifth?
I mean,
in point, like
they've
in
also
point percentage,
something like that. Yeah,
yeah. So they probably wouldn't. They wouldn't host a first round series.
They would
scenario.
Have to get to the fourth spot.
It's doable. 8-3. Sure. 8-3 will get you there.
Right, and that's what 7-4 is kind of like. I do get. You know, is there a tie in there? Whatever. You always can't rule out ties with this team, but I'm thinking 8-3 is probably.
It helps that Penn State sold their home game to. Or no, did Michigan sold the home game to?
Yep. Well, it's the return because from 2 years ago, remember? Or 3 years ago, the Connors.
Yeah.
So.
It's for the fans, though.
It's for the fans.
No, honestly, isn't it part of the doubleheader?
Well, yeah. I mean, but there's a different basketball game. Michigan basketball doesn't play there that day.
Why did Michigan sell a home hockey game for a Penn State doubleheader?
Do you want to get into that in this podcast?
No, I guess. I mean, the things that's absurd about college hockey, that's like the 50th most absurd thing we could talk about. But
yeah.
Oh, well. It was still fun. I see 7-4 and 8-3 is like what they would need to do and then win a series. That's asking a lot. The way this team is constructed and the way they're trying to play, it's not outside of the realm of possibilities, I will say.
No, and if they get a little more puck luck than they did in the first half of the season, it wouldn't be shocking, but probably not likely.
I would say if it's going to happen, they need to start playing Norris a lot more.
Yeah.
And they would have to start playing Quinn Hughes probably half the game.
Yep. And they're going to have to produce.
You're going to get Norris to 22 minutes, which would be him running his regular first line and then subbing fourth line stuff. And then playing like a fourth line that could score. So you're getting Norris out there twice as much. And then you would have to, or not twice as much, but like 1.5, 1.6 times as much. And then you'd have to get Quinn Hughes up to like double shifting, or not quite double shifting, but like 1.5, 1.6.
Back end mistakes have got to go, and goaltending is going to need to be essentially what it was the last weekend. All right. Have a good few weeks, and hopefully Michigan hockey will as well.
Thank you for listening to MGO HockeyCast. My name is Anthony Ciotti with David Nasternak. And Dave, next time Michigan plays a really bad team on a Tuesday night, you can go to the Golden Knights game instead.